It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And welcome to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law here on the talk station. Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins in the studio with us this morning. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today, Cecil?
Well, Ben, I'll do a little introduction here, and then I'm going to turn it over to Wes, our in-house litigator.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to open up the subject and demystify a bit the concept of the statutes of limitations on cases. All cases in the law, Ben, have a statute whereby there is a time period that one needs to come forward and assert their cause of action, or their rights, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And the history of this, of these many, many statutes, is that we want cases to be current before the court.
Right.
We want evidence to be reliable. We want witnesses to still be available, and we want their memories to be bright, and not faded. We want documents to be, fairly pristine, fairly new. We don't want to look at a document unless we have to, you know, that's
right,
20 years
right,
old.
Exactly.
So for this reason, the law, the philosophy of law, if you will, has required that we come forward within certain periods of time and again assert our rights. And these are called statutes of limitations.
Mm-hmm.
And they apply in every kind of case. And they are different from case to case. So this is somewhat of a nightmare for lawyers like Wes and others who have to, you know, many times you just can't quite remember all of the statutes of limitations.
Right.
I mean, there are certain little handouts that come in from the state bar that give us guidelines on certain types of cases. But by and large, some of the more common ones we recall from memory, but many times mm-hmm. we are looking at the going back to the book, if
yeah,
you will,
exactly.
to really
yeah.
confirm our knowledge.
I know, Wes, it seems like this is a subject where you need a room that just has a giant chart and that has mm-hmm. all the various cases and
right.
scenarios, and you cross check them and see what the statute
well,
is.
Well, I feel like that over the years I've dealt with just about every statute of limitations that mm-hmm. that exists. But, you know, Cecil's right. There is a little bit of a web, you know, there is many different statutes of limitations dealing with the different types of claims and
mm-hmm.
different variations of the claims. But there's really, you know, five or six statute of limitations that we deal with more often than others.
Right. The ones that people should be most familiar with.
That's right. And that's a really important point that you just stated there, Ben, that people should be familiar with, because the attorney can't do anything with a case this stale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had clients come in with, you know, great legal cases, you know, pretty much black and white cases, a breach
right.
of contract, maybe a promissory note that wasn't paid on, but they waited so long
mm-hmm.
For one reason or another that the statute yeah. has expired, and there's just nothing that you can do about that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's helpful for listeners out there to understand just in general that, you know, if you think you have a legal claim or someone owes you something under a contract, or if there was a car accident that's really old and you don't know what's going on with it because of the insurance.
Mm-hmm.
When I say really old, I mean maybe 2 or 3 years ago,
right.
you know, something like that. Then it's a good idea to meet with an attorney and talk with them about, you know, your claim to make sure that your rights are upheld
mm-hmm.
and you don't lose your rights under the statute of limitations.
Opposing party may know that statute well and has strung you along and for
no,
a while.
No question about that. Mm-hmm. And that's an affirmative defense. Once the complaint is filed, you raise the statute of limitations as an affirmative defense in your responsive pleading. And if the facts are that the statute is already run, then your case just dies on
mm-hmm.
the vine immediately.
Mm.
So, you know, it's a very black and white situation when we're dealing with those, you know, numbers
right.
and dates and when things took place.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that we look at most often would be Negligence. Let's talk about negligence first.
Okay.
Negligence would be your classic car accident. It would be any other, situation where someone was not acting reasonably.
Mm-hmm.
And, maybe you were injured as a result of that negligence. And that statute of limitations in North Carolina is a 3-year statute of limitations from the date that you knew or should have known of the harm or the accident. So it would be 3 years from the accident when you were injured in the accident. The new or should have known is an interesting concept because in certain circumstances you can have negligence that you don't really learn about until later.
Right.
For example, let's say that there's a situation where someone is doing work on your home,
mm-hmm.
and it's determined that that work was negligent. Now, we get into all kind of issues about whether it's a contract claim or a negligence claim, and that's mm-hmm. for another show. Probably not even for this program because that gets complicated. But nevertheless, you might not learn about the problem with regard to the work that was done in your home until the windows start leaking.
Exactly.
Until you have, mold in your, wherever it might be in the house. And then that trigger would be when you should have learned of the problem. And mm-hmm. that would be, borne out in your testimony as to when you first noticed a problem with regard to, your home. That would
sure.
be attributable to that negligence.
Yeah.
So that's how that knew or should have known, works.
Mm-hmm.
So the 3-year there.
So 3 years, knew or should have known.
Yeah.
I know of an example, as a bathtub that was installed in the house.
Right.
And the owner did not know that bathtub had been recalled because of cracks.
Right.
So they developed cracks, had problems. Sometime down the road.
That's exactly right. That would be, a classic knew or should have known type situation. Now, sometimes in this, in the construction context, we get into this knew or should have known issue because that's a pretty short period of time, the 3-year period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not as though, someone who has a small leak in their roof is going to run to the lawyer's office.
Right.
They're not going to, that's not reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to try to deal with it. They're going to talk with maybe the person who did the roofing. They might try to fix it themselves, those type things. But interestingly, in North Carolina, we have a case, with regard to this knew or should have known. It's more of a commercial, in a commercial context, but it was a warehouse where, the roof was redone
mm-hmm.
and there was a leak in one small corner of the roof and just a really small leak, no big deal. 2 years later, here's another leak,
mm-hmm.
and another leak, and another leak, and another leak. And it was determined that the installation of the roof was done in a negligent fashion.
Right.
Okay? The entire roof.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not talking about a $10,000 roof here. We're talking about a huge commercial building.
Oh,
we're talking about
yes.
hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Hmm.
Well, the civil action was not filed until after 3 years from when that owner of the property learned of the first leak.
Right.
The court found that was when you knew or should have known of all the leaks.
Oh, really?
Pretty tough law
yeah.
there.
Uh-huh.
So you really have to be cognizant of what's going on around you.
Mm-hmm.
And in the event that there's,
if the owner had
something out there,
if the owner had raised the question,
mm-hmm.
maybe in writing, had raised the question, should I be concerned about leaks throughout my roof? If they had raised that question, would that have?
What do you mean, raise the question? To whom?
To the contractor, to the person.
You did.
Uh huh.
Okay, and there was documentation with regard to this one issue,
mm-hmm.
this one initial leak, and that's what sunk the ship, because the documentation was dated, and there was no he said, she said about that or
mm-hmm.
Recollection about when it happened. We had a certain date, but that would not close out the statute of limitations or preserve the statute of limitations.
Mm.
They would have had to file suit within the 3-year period of time.
Okay.
Harsh law, but that's
yeah.
where it is. In
I mean,
Carolina.
even the person comes back and said, oh, no, you don't have to worry about anything else on the roof.
Well, I mean, then we can talk about, hey, okay, fine. I've got a problem here with this area of the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Don't want to do anything about it. I don't want to file a lawsuit. Why don't you give me a warranty?
Right.
Why don't you get, let's do something
okay.
in writing here. So if something
else
does
happens,
pop up,
right.
then we can come back to the warranty documentation. And usually when you're talking about, you know, a commercial application like this anyway. There's probably going to be some pretty significant documentation involved in the contract, and you're probably going to have an express warranty of some sort as well. And that express warranty may extend much longer than that three-year period of time.
But again, that's where that knew or should have known really can come into play.
That's
better act on it.
That's right. That's right. So I guess the moral for the story for listeners is that, you know, we were talking about a in a construction context, just understand what's going on around you and know that if you've got problems that you're trying to patch or put a Band-Aid on you, you know, that is going to start that 3 year as far as any obligation that a contractor or, you know, someone who's done the work would have.
Some of the other instances that you might want to be aware of that involve statute of limitations, we'll get to that in just a moment. Your calls are welcome at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, 353-4674. Maybe you've had a problem with this issue. You want to raise it. Here with the folks from Harvell & Collins, Attorneys at Law, on the web at harvellandcollins.com. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, Attorneys at Law here on the Talk Station. And joining us, as always, is Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell. We're talking about statute of limitations.
Right. We've talked about the three-year a little bit. You know, that applies to negligence cases. That also applies to contract cases, Ben. So, you know, if you have a contract with someone and they breach the contract, you have 3 years to file suit in order to perfect your rights under the contract and seek your recovery. Now, that does become altered or changed to a certain degree in the event that the contract is under seal.
What does that mean?
Well, you know, we've all seen those documents before that we've signed that have the little S-E-A-L out beside the name.
Yeah.
And you wonder, you know, what is that? And basically, that is a legal concept that if the document is under seal, if it has either like a corporate seal on it, in language that seal has been adopted or that the word seal has been adopted as your true bona fide seal, then the statute of limitations based on that language being in the document is extended to a 10-year statute of limitations. So normally, you know, I think the history is those type of documents that would be under seal would be more like secured documents under Uniform Commercial Code, like promissory notes. Those kind of things. Obviously, documents you sign with a bank for a loan or a lending institution for a loan, they're all going to be under seal. So the right to collect against those type documents would be a much longer statute of limitations, which would be a 10-year from the date of breach.
It comes from old English law, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think that's my recollection. You know, you deal with that seal in a lot of documents, and I put that in a lot of documents, even if they're not, don't have anything to do with the Uniform Commercial Code and promissory notes, just documents I'm preparing if I want a longer period of time for my client to be able to enforce it in the event of a breach.
Okay.
Because the 3 years is a little bit short. Now, when we apply that to the promissory notes, or Uniform Commercial Code, or secured document, or secured instruments, you know, we talk about when that statute of limitations begins to run. Does it run right from the breach, and what can be done to revive it? And that's an interesting concept because, you know, we could have a long period of time of no payment, but if then there is a single payment on, for example, a promissory note, that's going to revive the entire instrument. And sometimes we get into those issues in older cases, maybe estate-related cases where, you know, one of the children borrowed some money and there was some payment back, but the other children didn't know about it. And then we look at, you know, whether there were any payments and when those payments were being made. If the breach or the failure to pay has some age on it, because, you know, we're able to revive that statute of limitations on the entire document, even if we have, you know, proof of one payment, for example, within that 10-year period of time that we were just talking about.
Okay.
So we get into that sometimes. It's kind of a moving target. It's not always so black and white. You have to, you know, get into, you know, those type of factual issues. Other statutes we look at, you know, that's one that's been pretty prevalent over the past several years with foreclosures being so rampant. I think it's slowing down now, but still.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. But still, that's been something that most attorneys who deal with real estate and litigation in any aspect have really gone back to school on foreclosures over the past five or 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of doing, you know, one or two a year, it's, you know, a lot, put it that way. But one of the very important statutes of limitations with regard to a foreclosure would be the 1 year statute from the sale, the foreclosure sale, to seek a deficiency action.
Mm-hmm.
That's very important for those people out there who know that maybe they were subject to a foreclosure, that, that maybe the bank bought the property back or the a third party bought the property back, but that didn't cover the whole debt.
Right.
And there's another $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $200,000
mm-hmm.
that is still owed on that debt.
And they have a year then to try to seek that.
That's right. The bank or the lender would have that right to try to seek through a separate lawsuit,
mm-hmm.
which is what's called a deficiency
mm-hmm.
action. Action to seek a deficiency would have 1 year to bring that. That's in our foreclosure statute. So that's an example of where we have hidden little statute limitations.
Mm-hmm.
We have lots of our statute limitations in one book, which is in statute 1-50 and 52 and all that. And then we've got this 1 year over here in the foreclosure statute.
Right.
You know, it's buried.
Is that where if you had a short sale though and the you try to get in the language that they would agree not to seek a deficiency action?
Yep, we've talked about that. So, you know, if we're talking about doing a short sale or a deed in lieu,
mm-hmm.
then we'd like to see language in the deed that we're giving that this is full satisfaction of the debt.
Mm-hmm.
So then that's going to cut off the right to seek that deficiency anyway.
Yeah.
But the 1 year is important. I've had clients come in, you know, a year and a half after the foreclosure, and they're concerned that they're going to get sued, or maybe the bank is even still sending demand letters to them. And I've been able to give them really quick comfort in
mm-hmm.
that as it relates to, you know, the deficiency action. Now, as Andrew Foster, our tax attorney, has said, there's still tax implications with all that.
We may have to bring that up on Thursday.
That's his
program, Life and Taxes.
That's right. But as far as the actual lawsuit for the full indebtedness, that's a 1 year statute from that foreclosure sale.
Okay. Well, again, a fascinating subject because these are the most common ones. As we said, there's another whole chart full, a book full of statute of limitations, and we'll get to a couple more. But if you want to find out more, listen to past shows and find out more information, you can go online at harbellandcollins.com. If you want to seek their advice and hire them, you can call at 252-726-9050 at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City. And more with Let's Talk Legal with Harbell and Collins right after this. Collins leading this discussion here, and Wes, we've hit some of the ones, but there are some others that people come and encounter all the time.
Yeah, the mechanics and materialman's lien statute is a very short statute, 120 days and 180 days are the
mm-hmm.
two time frames that apply to those type situations. And basically what that's about is that if someone is doing, a laborer is doing some type of improvement on a property,
mm-hmm.
It could be also maybe even a surveyor. It could
be
an architect. It could be anyone providing services
mm-hmm.
to property. And if they haven't been paid on the property, then within 120 days of the last day that they provided, whatever service it was, they would have a right to file a notice of lien, basically in the courthouse where the property is located, and that serves as a cloud on title. So that's going to impede any closing. If the architect says he's entitled to $10,000, he was never paid on the deal, and he files it within 120 days, his notice of lien is on record, and the owner tries to go to closing, that's going to stand in the way.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea here is that we want people to get paid who have actually done the work.
Right.
Well, we have certainly had situations before where we have dealt with, you know, bogus notice of liens being put on record, and
mm-hmm.
and you know, that becomes a problem.
Yes.
We have to deal with that, and there is liability for that in the event that they're incorrect notice of liens under what's called slander of title.
Mm-hmm.
But Nevertheless, back to the time frame, 120 days will be the day, will be the time frame in which we have to put the notice of lien on record. And then in the event that that's not paid within, or it's not worked out, negotiated, whatever it might be, within 180 days of the last day that any work is done, then in order to keep that lien, you have to file a civil action, a lawsuit, to perfect the interest in the lien. And then that would proceed to the merits of the case eventually. And either you keep your lien or you don't keep your lien based on that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, however, if you miss your 180 days, if you don't file your action within that period of time, you still have a 3-year period of time in which to file your lawsuit for either probably breach of contract. We had an agreement. I was going to do this work. Mm-hmm. I did this work. You didn't pay me. Now, that doesn't encumber the property.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a lawsuit.
Yeah.
I mean, you could, it doesn't impede the closing.
Right.
The final closing, the final loan may take place, but you're then seeking recovery against the owner or the person you contracted with.
So, Ben, what's coming to mind here is that, and we started at the beginning of the program with just the purpose of statutes of limitations many times are to make sure that the evidence, to make sure that the case, the witnesses, all of those things are ripe and ready and not faded in memory. The other large philosophy of law issue that's going on here is a sense of closure.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Got to get it done.
For instance, you know, when, you know, there has to be a deadline, for instance, in the mechanical lien area, materialsman lien area of the law, so that the title to the property is, in fact, clear.
Mm-hmm.
The same in the estate arena. You have to come forward and file your lien within, you know, file your claim of lien, claim of case against the estate within 3 months. Well, that's because, you know, there has to be a time period there so that the executor can close the estate.
Right.
So, again, not only are these statutes of limitations in place so as to make evidence ripe and clean and new and fresh, but also to allow the economy, if you will, to continue to steamroll forward and there be a sense of closure as to the case.
Okay. All right. Again, if you want to find out more, you want to call in, folks.
Hey, welcome back.
We're talking about the 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, 252-726-9050.